Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, all you wonderful, wonderful F1 fans out there. We are back from another two-week break. We are now into round six of the 2023 Formula One season, and if you're hearing my voice, that can only mean two things. One, that my name is Kelsey, and two, you are listening to the newest, brand newest, and best episode of F101. And as always, we're going to start off this week with hot topics and hot topics only. And these are some things that you definitely need to know in the world of Formula One. And we're going to start off with, in my opinion, the most pressing situation that this team needs to face at this point. This is also one of the more surprising things that you're going to hear about Formula One in the next coming weeks. Alpine is set to replace their team principal Atmar Szafer before Imola, and Imola as the time of this recording is actually the end of this week. So Alpine is not happy with their team principal. They have decided that they're going to replace him, which is fine. I mean, all teams, professional sports teams, Formula One teams, they can replace anybody on their team at any time that they seem fit, which is a smart, intelligent thing to do for growth and for new sponsorship and to win championships. But to only give yourself 2 weeks to get this done, they had announced this last week, and I was waiting about an additional week to let you guys know, just in case it was rumors or they didn't follow through, or if they had any replacements they were going to announce. It is true, they don't have any replacements yet, and Alpine is still kind of in that limbo of, we know what we want to do, we don't know what we want to do, maybe we are moving a little bit too fast because we need a replacement and we don't have it yet. Now, they did talk to ex-team principal from Ferrari, Matteo Binotto, and he just flat out turned it down. He's like, I do not want to work for Alpine. I mean, and he's a guy that is doing or had done well in Ferrari before. He is a team player. He does get the best out of the people that he works with when given the opportunity to rule as he sees fit. I don't know if rule is the right approach, but he, you know, coaches as he sees fit. I think because Alpine has stated that they had a 5-year plan, a 100 race plan, and they kept resetting it, they reset it a couple times, and then they brought in the brand new, you know, the all French connection team for an all French team that seems all fine and well, but they didn't get the performance so far that they had expected from the teams or from the team itself. They are not pulling the points that they expected to see in the 2023 season, as well as Zaffauer's leadership skills. Just, it seems to be like it's being stretched and definitely put to the test. He doesn't seem like he knows what he wants to do in which direction he wants to pull the team. Yeah, he's got a general overall 100 race plan, and then we're going to be fighting for the front. But that's an overall team plan. That is a team accomplishment. What he himself wants to accomplish, he hasn't stated. How he wants to lead the team, he doesn't really show as much as you would think from a team principal. And I think this is a good chance for Alpine to bring in somebody new and somebody fresh. I just think that, just kind of like the Oscar Piastri fiasco of last season, they've thought it through about 60% of the way. They had a timeline too short. They wanted to make a change, which is good. They identified where they wanted to make the change, except they don't have a replacement. So like I said, they're about 60% there. And to give themselves 2 weeks before Imola to replace the team principal and not have somebody step in right away or announce someone who's going to take over, what are they going to do for Imola? Let's say, hypothetically, they don't find a new team principal before the end of the week and it's race weekend. If you're Szafer, do you actually perform like you're supposed to? Do you lead like it was intended to? Or do you just kind of go, hey, you guys were going to fire me today anyways. I'm done. I'm not helping out in any possible circumstance, in any possible significant direction. Does he just throw his hands up and leave? Does he stick around and show everybody that he's a team player? what do you do? This is going to be one of those ongoing dramas that you definitely want to pay attention to, that I will be keeping you updated on. And it's going to be very interesting to see how the team itself reacts to all of these rumors, speculations, and actual confirmed intentions this coming up weekend. Alpine is not, I mean, they're not horrible. Alpine is sixth right now in the constructors with 14 points. They're tied with McLaren for fifth, who also has 14 points. So if they can pull it together, they can get fifth in the constructors series. And I think realistically, that's where this team is. Fifth and sixth, realistically. You've brought in a brand new driver who needs to learn a new system, a new car. And I think for them to get rid of their team principal now is a little short-sighted. Yes, they have reset their structural goals and 100 race victory goals a couple of times, which doesn't look good. But when you need to reset things to start over again, you need to reset things to do it properly. I think under the guidance of Zafauer, I think they've done that appropriately. And they're in a more competitive situation than they would have been last year and the year before. So I think it's a little premature, but I think it's going to be very interesting to see what Alpine does this coming up weekend. They do have the consistency right now to get more points, to get that fifth spot. They're not going to catch Ferrari. They're in fourth with 78 points. But to show that they're a unified team, I do think they need to come together no matter who the replacement is, if there is a replacement. But it's definitely a story that you want to keep an eye on. Moving on, next topic, we're going to stick there with the replacement story. It was reported, and it was not fact or fiction. It was, you know, it is truth, and it all depends on how much you want to read into it. Depends on how interesting this next topic is for you. Daniel Ricciardo has been fitted for his own racing seat. Now, everyone has been speculating that he will be the one to replace Nyck de Vries sooner rather than later. Now, I would like to point out that this may be true one way or the other, but as Daniel is a third driver and he is with Red Bull, it does make him open to driving in AlphaTauri. That part is true. But because he is a third driver, he needs to be fitted for a seat, personal seat, anyways, because he will be doing evolution laps in the RB19 this season. He'll be doing some more research for that, aerodynamic specifications, all that kind of fun stuff. He does actually need to be racing in a vehicle, which means he does need to have his own seat. Now, does that mean automatically that he will be on the racetrack in more than a practice and research and development capacity? I want to say yes, and I want to say no. I'm torn either way. I want to say yes because this is a very promising step for him, although be it is a structured step. He is doing what he is supposed to be doing. He's proved himself in simulations that he needs to be on the track, which is part of his job. And I want to say yes because he is still the driver that we all remember. He is still the driver that we all love. He is still a very skilled driver in Formula One. He just needed his break. And I think he's taken that little mental vacation. He's done the wine thing. He's done in front of the camera. He's relaxed. He's smiling more than ever. He's had that rest and relaxation time. And now it's time to get to work. And when Daniel Ricciardo decides to get to work, he is a very influential and he's also a very dangerous driver. And I don't mean dangerous in a bad way. I mean dangerous as in he will be dialed in, locked in. He'll be showing lap times that will make Red Bull think, he needs to be on the track sooner rather than later. How can we fit him in? Where can we fit him in? And this, just in that concept itself, does not bode well for Nyck de Vries. And Nyck de Vries is still in his rookie year. He's five races in. Okay. As much as I want him to be the best rookie that we have this season, I personally, and everyone who is a Nyck de Vries fan, also has to remember that he's driving in an AlphaTauri, so that gives him a disadvantage right off the bat. It's not the strongest car they've ever come up with. Their own team principal has absolutely no faith in the aerodynamics of the vehicle. A lot of testing for Red Bull does get done to a certain extent on the AlphaTauri team. So it's kind of a research and development team. And they weren't exactly expected to be rocketing up the Constructors Series points ladder anyways. They're sitting in ninth right now with 2 points. That's not where they belong. In my opinion, they need to be, or they should be, fighting for sixth and fifth spot, they do have the talent in Yuki Tsunoda. They do have the talent in Nyck de Vries. Now, that also comes as a double-edged sword. They had touted him as the perfect replacement for Pierre Gasly. They touted him as being better than Pierre Gasly and that he was going to bring AlphaTauri into the new generation of points and development and glory as being the sister team of Red Bull. I think it was a hasty decision for them to bring in Nyck de Vries. I think it was one of those more of a prestige over practicality concepts. Let's bring in a big name because we can't get we couldn't get Piastri. Let's get de Vries. So let's make ourselves on the map with this, you know, 28-year-old rookie. He's got all this experience. He's won F2, F3. He's done all this spectacular stuff. It'll sell tickets. It'll sell merchandise. And it should bring in more sponsorship deals. And I'm sure it has to a certain extent. But they totally forgot for the fact that he's still a rookie. He won F2 and he won F3. Congratulations. He's had some testing time in older Formula One cars, but he's never actually done a full season in Formula One. He's 5 races in. He doesn't have a whole lot of points, if any points at all. I think Yuki Tsunoda has gotten all the points for the team. But it's a rookie year. You put any other rookie in that situation, and everyone's like, okay, he's five races in, going into his sixth. He's going to get better. He has to learn. He's not going to have the greatest season right off the bat. He's not a Lewis Hamilton. He's not a Max Verstappen. He's not a Fernando Alonso. He needs to grow into the driver that he expects himself to be, and he needs to grow into the driver that the team and the fans expect him to be further down the road. That's the key, further down the road. But with Daniel Ricciardo getting his seat fitted, with him being able to hop back and forth between Red Bull and AlphaTauri, and him being the financially smart and driver point smart decision to replace de Vries, I think they're giving de Vries a much shorter leash than he deserves. So they've given him an additional 3 races to prove himself. The team principal for AlphaTauri essentially came out going, Nyck de Vries has a yellow card. He's on his final warning. If he doesn't improve, then he's going to be out in the next 3 races. Okay, so that makes it 8 races in a Formula One rookie season. In my opinion, that's absolutely not fair. That's bullshit. And I think if they do replace Nyck de Vries with Daniel Ricciardo, it will be to make money. That's the only reason why they're going to do it. It's not going to help the team. It's not to make the team better. It's for them to be, well, you know, Daniel was an amazing driver. He was the perfect coincidental backup plan. And, you know, we wish Nyck de Vries the best, but he's not the right fit for the team. If you kick him out after 8 races, shame on AlphaTauri and shame on Red Bull for bringing in a very competent rookie to bring in a very, you know, reliable future driver. I think he is going to win races. He is going to get points. But to give him only 8 races and to dangle that exit over his head going, you've got 3 races, or, hey, look, it's either going to be Daniel Ricciardo or Mick Schumacher's name's been thrown in there as well, but not nearly as seriously as Daniel going, hey, these are your 2 replacements if you don't score points and kick ass in 3 races. You have Imola coming up. You are not going to be kicking ass and taking names in Imola. This is very much a veteran-structured race. Either you know the laps and you know the track or you don't. And Nyck de Vries just doesn't have that experience yet to make an impact this weekend. Now, me saying that right now, watch him come out of the blocks, get a top 10 or even win the race. You know, who knows? It's supposed to be absolutely atrocious weather this weekend for the Imola race, but you never know. But to dangle that kind of exit threat over him takes a very special kind of driver to block that out and just become better. Now, obviously, I don't know Nyck de Vries. Only the people close to him and his teammates know he will either rise to the occasion or he is going to absolutely crumble. And if he does crumble, in my opinion, it is absolutely not his fault. He wasn't given a fair shake. And again, this is if they cut him after 8 races and replace him with Daniel Ricciardo, again, as I see just as a pure profit move. Sell more t-shirts, sell more tickets, bring Danny Ric back to the back to the fold because everybody loves him realistically. I think it would be a hollow victory for Daniel for him to come back to AlphaAtari after replacing Nick DeVries and not having him given a proper chance. But you want to race or you don't want to race. That's kind of the choice they've given him. But so Daniel Ricciardo, to recap, Daniel Ricciardo has gotten a seat personally fitted for him. He is a third driver, so he does have to have that seat fitted for him. And yeah, Nick DeVries is on the chopping block. It's an unfortunate event for one and an opportunistic one for the other. I want to see Nick succeed. I really do because I see the potential in him. But the selfish Formula One fan and Daniel Ricciardo fan that I am, I want to see him back on the track. I don't want to see him in AlphaAtari. I want to see him in either a Red Bull or I want to see him... I don't want to say Ferrari. I would love to see him in maybe Aston Martin. I would love to see him in Mercedes. That would be fantastic. But I want to see Daniel Ricciardo back on the track. I don't want to see Nick DeVries get shortchanged after only 8 races because he's not living up to the expectations and hype, air quotes. Moving on. This next topic to me seems like a massive no-brainer, but this is the world of Formula One. This is the world of billionaires and tons of corporations. So you tell me what you think. Stefano Domenicali, who is the CEO of the Formula One group in general, so he has the overlook of everything, has come up with a statement that says F1 cannot and will not step into... Let's rewind that and let's try that again. The CEO of the Formula One group has stated, Formula One cannot and will not step in to curtail the dominance of the Red Bull group this season. Essentially, what that means is that so many teams, Mercedes specifically, has bitched, whined, and complained that Red Bull is too dominant this series that they need to do something about it to make it more even. So the CEO has come out and essentially in a very political and formal and polite way has told everybody, suck it up. This is a sport. If they're winning, they're winning. Deal with it. So I don't think this should be as big of an issue as it is becoming, essentially for the fact that the CEO is promoting fair play in sport. Now, you didn't hear any other team whine nearly as much as Mercedes is now when Mercedes won 7 championships in a row, where they weren't just winning, they were absolutely demolishing the rest of the 9 teams on the grid. And now that Red Bull has had 2 full successful seasons, and in my opinion, a 3rd in a row, now all of a sudden, it's not fair. You need to slow them down. You need to make them change the rules. This isn't fair. And now just picture a 3-year-old stomping their feet and having a massive hissy fit because they're not winning anymore. Essentially, this is a parent going, hey, learn to deal with it. They're not going to win all the time and just it's fair play. I don't think in the world that we're in now, and yes, I know there's millions and millions and potentially billions of dollars that are in F1, that it is appropriate in my mind for full grown men to literally ask the person running the entire organization to handicap another team so it's fair. You're an adult. You know what fair play is. You know that sometimes you win and sometimes you lose. You're losing at the moment. Suck it up and deal with it, especially Mercedes. You won 7 years in a row and not a little bit, but you dominated because you have a $500 million research cap. Now, all of a sudden, there's a budget in place and you're not winning and you're complaining. Now, it's not just Mercedes. I will give that caveat. It's a lot of teams saying they're just so dominant in the last 2 seasons. And as a viewer, to a certain extent, some of the races are ridiculously boring. Okay, Red Bull 1-2 up front. Yay, they won by like 27 seconds to the 3rd place. And then after that, it just drops from like 27 seconds to like 1.5 minutes. Does it make for boring racing? It can occasionally. But this is the essence of sports. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. Sometimes teams dominate, sometimes teams need to catch up. Perfect example, I mean, across the board when it comes to sports, I'm thinking the New York Yankees in baseball. I'm thinking the New York Rangers in hockey. You've got the New England Patriots for football, American football. Now, when it comes to European football, I mean, Arsenal, Real Madrid, like all these teams come to mind where they just, they've got seasons where they dominate everybody multiple seasons in a row. And then they've got teams where they have to rebuild and start from scratch. You don't hear those organizations whining, bitching, and complaining about this. And they don't have to have their CEOs of the entire franchise and organization going, now, now, guys, you have to play fair. But if they're winning, they're winning. It's like, why does Formula One have to be different? Red Bull's winning at this time. Congratulations. Good job, Red Bull. Don't forget that they have less wind tunnel time. They've all of us, they've got the financial penalties from last season. All of that has yet to be put into effect yet. They're using up all their research and development time that they can and wind tunnel time now. So they literally have none left by the end of the season. So they're winning now. We're five races in. Stop complaining. You're five races in out of 23. We have 18 more to go. At some point, someone will beat a Red Bull. And if they don't, they dominated again. Big deal. It's not the end of the world. Again, this is just from my point of view. I'm not involved with the sponsorship or the amount of money in Formula One in general, but you shouldn't have to have essentially dad come down and tell all the kids to play nicely and that we're not going to change the rules for another team to not win as much. They shouldn't even be asking that. That shouldn't even be a consideration. The rules are there for a reason. If all of a sudden you start to change the rules because one team is too fast, then what's the point of a race? You're going to start changing it no matter who, no matter what team is winning, no matter how many points are, all of a sudden you're going to change the race where the fans don't know what's going on, the teams don't know what's going on, and all of a sudden it's not fair. Because as soon as you start to change the rules and you have this much money involved, something is going to get messed up. Something is going to be not as clear as it should. And it opens up the door for corruption to get into Formula One that would absolutely just ruin the entire thing. You already have, I mean, Formula One's already getting ruined for the pricing that you have to pay to go and see a race. Now you're going to go change the rules so everybody gets along. That's not how this works. This is sport. You win, you lose. You dominate, you get your ass handed to you. So I think it was a fantastic move from the CEO of the Formula One group to actually come out and make a statement going, we cannot and will not change the rules because Red Bull is winning. I think they should have stated that, just take out the cannot and just do, we will not change the rules. The rules are there for a reason. If they win, fantastic. If they break the rules, we're going to catch them, and there's going to be another penalty, which gives another opportunity for another team to get past them, to do better, to win. But until that time comes, if you get second, you get second. If you're the second team in the constructors, be happy with that. If you win, yay. If there's an opportunity to beat the Red Bull team in general, take it. Don't rely on the refs and the CEOs and the stewards and the race directors to change the rules because you're not good enough, because that's essentially what it's boiling down to. Other teams are not good enough to beat Red Bull for the third season in a row, and they're starting to complain. I don't know what else to tell you. I think the CEO did a fantastic job telling them he's not going to change the rules, which is great, and the other teams need to stop complaining. Switching gears, we go from rules that should not change and things in Formula One that should not change to things in Formula One that 100% need to change, in my opinion, and this is coming from a working class Canadian. I don't have a ton of money to spend on Formula One, as I'm sure a lot of you don't. And even at that, what I'm about to tell you is just beyond the price of reasonable. It goes into the category of price gouging and needless cost and spectacle and gimmicky, and it just, to me, it speaks 100% U.S. race. We're talking about pricing in Formula One, the Miami Grand Prix. We just finished that. The race is what it is. The spectacle, it was great. It was a little gimmicky at times, and it has now come out, the pricing for Formula One, and we're not even talking the tickets. We're talking food. A lot of things that people don't think about all the time is that there are substantial costs that go along to going to Formula One. hotel rooms, and then there's just your food, anything you want to drink, if you want to buy any kind of merchandise, and just all the extras that go along with a weekend. Now, there were spots in Miami where you could have reasonably priced food, but that being said, it wasn't actually at the event. A lot of people were complaining, oh, well, we got tacos here and we got beer here and all this and that, but they don't tell you is it wasn't actually at Formula One. It was in Miami off the grounds where prices are what they should be. But as soon as you hit the event in Miami, food prices specifically, the cheapest thing, and we're not talking like VIP. This is just, you're there, you're in one of the restaurants, you're in one of the like the paddock lounges, all that kind of stuff. This is not high-end VIP. This is just pricing to eat at Miami, is that the cheapest thing on one of the menus was $200 American. Like that is absolutely, absolutely unacceptable. Like $200 for one person. You don't want to know what it is? It was guava and dulce de leche bundt cakes. It doesn't say how many you get. Traditionally, bundt cakes are not massive. You're talking like, if you do the high-end ones, they're about the size of a hockey puck, give or take, and twice as thick. Like, these are not massive things. And it's $200. That thing better be served to me on a golden fucking plate. Someone better be feeding it to me for $200 for bundt cakes. Like, absolutely not. And the pictures and the statements coming out from the Miami Grand Prix is that the quality is absolute garbage. There's pictures floating around the Formula One website, Formula One on Twitter as well, just social media in general. Somebody got a essentially what ended up being a steak sandwich, like a Wagyu sub, for $42 American. The bun looks old. The meat looks like four pieces. Absolutely disgusting. He has it open. There's no sauce. There's nothing decadent. $42. And then whatever he had to drink on top of that. Furthermore pricing, the most expensive thing on that price list in Miami, and this is American dollars. Everyone's thinking like, this may be like, is this wrong? Is it a typo? No. Highest two items, $500 each. $500. One is called the U5 chilled prawns. You get cocktail sauce and prawns for $500. Again, they don't tell you how big it is. They don't tell you how many people it can feed. But for me, if I'm paying $500 for prawns, it better feed me and fucking everybody else. They must be the best prawns I have ever had. They better be the gigantic prawns that you can get that are ridiculously expensive. And I better be full when I'm done. The other one is the F1 platter. This one is essentially a game day platter that you would get at a bar. You've got sliders, quesadillas, chipotle sauce, chicken fingers, honey mustard sauce. Now, the quesadilla is Wagyu quesadillas. So what's the percentage of meat there? That's actually Wagyu, like 10%. That's it. You're looking at $500 and it serves four, and you get, let's count, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 items. It's $100 an item. When was the last time you went somewhere and had $100 chicken strips? How good were those chicken strips? Not only that, $100 for mustard sauce if you want to break it down per item, or honey mustard. That better be the best goddamn honey mustard sauce I have ever had. Gordon Ramsay himself better be making that stuff for me for $100. No, let's scratch that. Anthony Bourdain better be out of his grave and making me honey mustard and chicken fingers for $100 each on a $500 platter, plus tax. And I'm sure there's a ton of gratuity on top of that. Now, some of you may be wondering why I'm so upset about the food part. Well, give you a little bit of background. I am a 18-year culinary veteran. I live the food world. I know what these items are. And I can tell you, I know there's markup on food, especially during event. Living in Calgary, we have the Calgary Stampede. There is food markups everywhere, restaurants during Stampede, after Stampede. I understand all of that. It does happen, plus inflation and all that kind of fun stuff that gets marked in as well. But five items, $500. You have got to be kidding me. This is the quintessential example of price gouging, and this is the quintessential reason why regular, hardworking F1 fans can't and will never be able to afford most Formula One races. There's no way I'm going to work for as long as I need to pay $500 for essentially prawns and cocktail sauce or an F1 platter. I'm sure as hell not paying $200 for bundt cakes. Like, it's just absolutely unacceptable. It keeps people away from these events. It doesn't make it fan-friendly. This makes it corporate-friendly. Yes, corporate sponsorship in Formula One is very, very important. I understand that. It's a very expensive sport. You need to get your name, your brand out there. You want to support the cars. You want to be able to pay for things that are very expensive. But at the same time, some kind of common sense with the vendors, with the organizers, with Formula One, and fuck, even with the FIA, this has got to stop at some point. This is Miami. This is the second year. God knows how expensive shit's going to be in Vegas when it shows up this year for the very first time. I mean, you're already seeing hotel prices skyrocket. You can only buy for the full 3 days, and they're like thousands of dollars above what you should be paying for a hotel room just because the event's in town. It's astronomically unacceptable. And unless the FIA and Formula One step in, I think these prices are just going to get even more out of control. You're going to drive the, I don't want to say standard, but the regular person away from Formula One. We're going to stay at home. We're going to get F1 TV, and we're going to order, you know, beer and pizza with everybody that wants to watch it. We're going to hang out and we're going to have a better time. Sure as hell not going to spend $500 on a platter of food once. And if you're there for 3 days, you know, $500 times how many times are you eating at the park? It can be thousands of dollars just on food itself. That's not even to mention what merchandise goes up during race weekends. It's absolutely ridiculous. Hats in Miami were going for $90 each. T-shirts, $110. Like what? Like what? What is going on here? During race weekends, a normal hat off the F1 website, and now I'm Canadian, so I can get it transferred into Canadian if you're American, and so on and so forth. It's a $300 increase to buy merch on a race weekend. It specifically goes up for that weekend from Thursday to Sunday. And I mean, I'm sorry, but that's just fucking ridiculous. That's just gouging on the superior product, in my opinion, that is Formula One. This is just trying to get the brand new dude who's just getting into it to spend as much money as humanly possible. Where if you look around where I live in Calgary, Alberta, I can go to the mall, I can go to Hudson Bay, and they have actual Formula One shirts in Hudson Bay. I can get a shirt for $60 Canadian plus tax, make it about $75. You're not breaking the bank. You can get reasonable merchandise not on race weekends. And even at that, you shouldn't be charging that much for a product that's not worth that much on any other day of the week. I had a couple friends go to Montreal. They bought all their merchandise 3 months ahead of time off the website in the off season before they went to Montreal. Then they went to Montreal. I had a friend buy two hats, one Mercedes and one, I believe it was McLaren. He spent $160 on two hats. Like, that's just absolutely ridiculous. My brother-in-law went, he got himself a McLaren shirt. That was like $140. Like, the prices don't need to be this high. I understand you want to make money, you need to make money, capitalism, all that kind of stuff for Formula One. But at the same time, guys, bring it down to an affordable level. Otherwise, no one's going to end up being able to go anymore. They're all going to be corporate events, at least in North America. And no one's going to want to go. To give those prices of food and merchandise a comparison, you can buy a 3-day pass, race pass, for in Japan, the Hungarian Grand Prix, the Austrian Imola, and the Italian Grand Prix, and you're going to have money left over just for the money that they would spend on the menu in Miami. You buy a $500 F1 platter, you can get a 3-day pass, race pass in Japan, in Hungary, in Austria, in Italy. Like, it, you shouldn't have to be comparing that. Either you eat or you can buy a pass for 3 days in Europe. okay, granted, you throw the flight in there, it's a little bit more expensive, but I don't see why the North American model has to be so expensive compared to the rest of the world. I know you want to make money. It's got to be this big, spectacular event. Make it affordable so it's a long-term spectacular event for everybody. I mean, do they not realize the more people that go, that can go, that can afford to go, they will make more money over the long term? Do you want a big bang that doesn't last? Or do you want a successful, long, historical event? Apparently, these guys just want nothing but fast profits as much as you can possibly get, and they don't really care who shows up. The only race in North America, in my opinion, that is even close to being affordable is the one in Austin, Texas at COTA. You can do a 3-day pass in the grandstands for like $350 American. Then you add your food, your hotel, all that kind of stuff. It still ends up to be an expensive weekend, but at least it's more affordable than going to Miami. And don't even think about going to Vegas. Like, it's just, I know guys that ended up getting tickets, cheap tickets to Vegas, and you're talking $2,500 American for 3 days. No hotel, no food, no nothing, just $2,500 American for the tickets. Like, that's absolutely unacceptable in my opinion. That being said, I've said this before, I do expect a price correction to happen, maybe not this season, probably after Vegas. So looking at the 2024 season, I do expect the FIA to roll in and go, hey, this is not, because they're going to start to see numbers drop. Everyone's going to start to stay home. You can, you know, watch the race from different angles. It's more affordable. Hang out with friends. I do expect the FIA and Formula One to step in and go, hey, you can't, like, you have to have a price correction. You can't charge this much on the weekends, or they set a price cap, or however they want to put it. Find a discount solution for Montreal, Miami, and Vegas, because those are the most three expensive races in North America. But yeah, that's what you're looking to spend when you go to Miami, and then God knows how much in Vegas. So that is definitely something you need to know when you do decide to go to a Formula One race. And I figured you guys needed to know. And that is going to wrap up the hot topics for this week. Join us this weekend for round 6 for Imola. It's set to be a fantastic race. I do, again, expect Red Bull to be number 1 and 2. But that being said, the weather is absolutely supposed to be, as of right now, it is Monday night. It is supposed to be absolutely atrocious as of right now for the weather in Imola, to an extent where there is a severe possibility that the race itself may get canceled for the entire weekend. They do have we have severe weather warnings out in North America. They have their version of it out in Europe, in Italy. So as of right now, the weather warning is still up for the entire week. So it'll be very interesting to see if they have a race, if they do, what the weather is even going to look like, if it's safe. But you never know until the actual weekend shows up. And last but not least, I just want to send out, from all of us at F101, I just want to send out a massive thank you for everybody that out there that is listening. And I want you guys to stay tuned for everything you need to know in the world of Formula One.